Shelter would have been another concern. Now we kind of have nice houses that seem to last quite a while, and you don't necessarily have to think about them too much. So these kind of basic needs have been overcome to some extent, and I'm going to say this only in certain parts of the world, but large areas of the world have overcome these problems. And where these have been overcome, people stop thinking about survival values and start thinking about, oh, what kind of fish do I fancy tonight? You know, in the past, you'd have whatever you caught. Now you go, oh, I fancy a bit of sea bass. Or what's the one I had the other day? Tilapia. You know, if I'd have been living in England 50 years ago, a tilapia. What is that? Do you know what a tilapia is? Have you come up? Have a look in the supermarket. They're kind of big red things. And apparently they're from Jamaica or somewhere like this. But, you know, that's a kind of self-expressive value. You know, quality of life issues become much more important. You know, when we go to the shops to buy clothes, we're kind of thinking, oh, what will look nice rather than what will keep me warm kind of thing. So we've moved from survival to self-expressive. And also he notes a shift from traditional values to secular rational values. Now, this is where most of the arguments occur. Because if you look at the most industrialized country on his list over here, the United States, well, you can't really say that they've gone to the top of the secular rational values. A country like Sweden has done that. But really, whether you believe him or not, it kind of boils down to whether you give him a bit of leeway on this. I will explain what traditional values are at the end if I've got a little bit of time. But kind of values that take authority from tradition, from past ideas, whereas secular rational values are ideas that are kind of based on evidence, on what actually works and what can be proven. Right. I will come back to this at the end. It's not come out as clearly as I hoped. This is from a magazine called Foreign Policy Magazine. I've tried to make it clearer on your map. But the idea is that, and I did a bit of this, and I was being sympathetic to what Engelhardt's ideas. And if you do look at the kind of, this is the latest 2000, this is the top 20 most globalized countries on there. So see, have a look and see if your country's on there. Singapore, apparently. Anybody from Singapore here? No? Well, that's the most globalized economy or country in the world, according to this survey. And the way they measure it is they measure economic globalization. How integrated is the economy into other world? How dependent is it on other countries' economies? Then it looks at personal. And what they mean there is, you know, what do Singaporean people do with themselves? Do they go traveling around the world? And apparently they do, quite a lot of them do this. They go all over the place. And lots of people go there too. So there's a kind of mixture, a melting pot. Actually teach it, a student from Singapore. They're not quite so politically integrated, which is the final one, but they are quite technologically integrated with the rest of the world. Now, Singapore, of course, is a very particular country. It's a fairly small place, and it's at the hub of kind of various trade routes. So it's probably a bit kind of idiosyncratic, which is a big word for a Wednesday morning. But have a look at it if you can spell it, of course, in a dictionary. Don't worry about it if you don't. But the idea here is, and actually if you do look at most of these countries and then look on the value map, I know it kind of involves a bit of flipping, you'll see that most of the globalized countries tend to be the ones with secular, rational, self-expressive values. Now, there are links on the PowerPoint presentation that I will send to Mr. Campbell, and he can make it available to you if you want to click through, because there are quite a few different clicking things you can do on this, if they work, of course. Well, I'm just going to run through the various different positions. This slide isn't on your handout for the simple reason that, well, it's just telling you what the three positions are. The three positions are presented in your handout, so don't worry. Basically, with regards to globalization, there are three broad positions and a slight nuance within one of them. There are people that say that globalization is happening. We are becoming one. We are becoming the same, and they're split into two groups. The first group say, this is great. Human beings all being together, thinking similarly, sharing experiences, being dependent upon each other. And then there are the other lot that say, God, that's awful. I don't want to be dependent on that lot. I don't like them very much. And it's a disaster because what we're doing is we're threatening our survival in this way. Yeah, I mean, you've probably heard some of these arguments before. So I'll go into those in a second. Then there are what we call the traditionalists or the skeptics. Do you know what a skeptic is? Somebody who doesn't believe. Somebody who doubts. And they're saying, hang on, there's no such thing as globalization. It's all, another big word, hyperbole, which is a good word, but I should have spelt it on there. Maybe he's looking up in a dictionary. Hyperbole. It's all hot air. It's all nonsense. And we'll come to them. And then finally, there are the transformationalists. That's a big long word, but luckily it's written on your sheet, so you won't have to kind of spell that one. And the transformationalists say something's happening, but it could be good or bad, depending on how we cope with it. All right. So the transformationalists, they want to, let's say they want to ride it like a horse. Have you ever seen the kind of Wild West where they ride the bucking bronco? You know, that's globalization, and the kind of transformationalists are trying to stay on the horse, if that makes sense. Okay, well, I'll present. Oh, and that's from David Helder. Don't worry too much about that. All right. One of the terms you might have heard, has anybody heard of this term, the global village? Ever heard? Yes? It's kind of common. And I suppose that's the first time that the globalization kind of comes up. It was from a guy called Marshall McLuhan, writing in Canada in the 1960s, 70s. And he was looking towards, he was really talking about television at that time, I suppose, and telephones. And he was impressed with the way that people could there use this technology, not just to talk to their neighbours, which of course gave them a fairly limited understanding of how the world works, but they could talk to people around the world and get a bigger picture. And they could also see images coming into their bedrooms, or, well, it depends where you got your telly, of course. That tells you where mine is. But images coming into their living rooms is probably a better analogy. Showing them that people live differently to them. And then this kind of, he thought, would be a good thing, because then people say, right, therefore people are different, but I can respect that. And this would develop a kind of, almost like a kind of conversation between different peoples from around the world, explaining to others, overcoming difficulties between cultures.